Digital Stratosphere, the podcast that helps organizations throughout the world with their digital transformation journeys. Here, you will find independent and technology agnostic advice with no software vendor sales spin to help you make the best decisions for your organization. Whether you are in the process of selecting technology, in the midst of your transformation, or trying to get your initiative back on track, Digital Stratosphere provides expertise and best practices to help.
Hi, my name is Eric Kimberling. I'm the CEO and founder of Third Stage Consulting Group. We're an independent ERP consulting firm that helps guide clients through their digital transformations. Wanted to talk today about the biggest hoaxes in the ERP software industry. Now, the intent of this video is not to be overly negative or overly critical of the industry, but it's to call the industry out for what it is and some of the practices that have persevered in the industry over the last few decades. And it's also meant to uncover some of the blind spots and some of the misinformation that oftentimes happens in the industry. And you might want to stay tuned for the number one slot on our countdown here. This is a loose countdown of 10 biggest hoaxes in the ERP software industry. Number one in particular, I think will generate a lot of controversy and discussion and attention. So we'll be curious to hear and see some of your comments and feedback. And by the way, before I jump right into the top 10 here, this video content is drawn from our annual report of the ERP industry. It's called the annual ERP report that we publish each year. It's based on our research, quantitative and qualitative, with the ERP implementations, companies that have recently gone through implementation. So I've included a link to that download in the information section of this YouTube video. So I encourage you to check that out as well. But in the meantime, we'll cover the top 10 hoaxes that are occurring in the ERP industry and the ones you should be aware of to help navigate with eyes wide open here. So the first one we're gonna cover here at number 10 is that only big ERP can scale for big global companies. And what we mean by that is 20 years ago, this was a true statement. SAP and Oracle were pretty much the only two products out there, maybe Bond, which was still considered a thing back in the 90s. But for the most part, it was generally your big ERP systems that were able to scale for big global companies. This is no longer the case, although many of the ERP vendors, especially the big ones, will tell you that you absolutely need a big ERP system to scale to meet the complex needs of a global supply chain and a global organization. What I would say is today's technology has less to do with the ability to handle transaction volumes, which is still important, but most ERP systems can handle pretty good amounts of transactional data and transactions in general. It's less about that, and today it's more about breadth of functionality and how well the software meets the needs that you as an organization have. So as long as you have a system that meets a minimum threshold for scalability in terms of being able to support a certain number of users or locations or transactional volumes, then you can shift your focus to what the specific functionality is that you're looking for and whether or not that system can provide it. So that's the number 10 thing that we need to have in mind as we're going through our digital transformations. Is it's there's a lot more options out there in the marketplace than there was 10, 20 years ago, even if you're a big organization. And especially if you're a small or mid-sized organization, there's a whole plethora of ERP systems that can scale and meet the needs of your organization. The number nine thing on our list here is the whole concept of single ERP. So if I'm an ERP vendor and I'm trying to sell you my product, I'm going to try to my best to convince you that single ERP systems are the way to go and that you should buy everything for your enterprise through my vendor and through my product offering, so you have one single source of truth, and so that you have one system for your people to use. And most importantly for me, if I'm a salesperson, I make more money that way. So that's the hidden agenda, or the not so hidden agenda, to keep in mind. Now, best of breed or multiple ERP systems, which is the alternative to single ERP, used to have a bad name, and it still kind of does in many cases. But the reality is there's so many systems out there that can handle different functional areas and operational needs better than any single ERP system can, that it's almost foolish to not at least consider some of those different options out there. So single ERP being the only way and the best way is a thing of the past and something that we've seen become somewhat obsolete here in more recent years. The number eight thing on our list is the entire sales proposal process. And I'll separate this into two components because I think one is more concerning than the other. There's certainly on the software side of things, which is the first part of this, it's a little bit more predictable. It's a little bit more tangible. You're buying a certain number of licenses with a certain number of modules. The tricky part, though, and the part of it that is a little bit hoax-ish when it comes to buying software is really having a good understanding of what it is that was demoed to you during the sales cycle and what you're actually contracting. Now, that's a big disconnect that a lot of organizations see is they don't necessarily understand what they're buying versus what they saw, or they saw something that was a different version of the software and now they're looking at the cloud version, or they were looking at the cloud version in the demos and now they're purchasing a different version or whatever the case may be. So the entire sales process really needs to be honed in on the software side. But if we shift gears and look at the implementer side, system integrators, implementation partners, this is where the real hoax happens, because more often than not, so often, these partners will come in and lowball their estimates just to get a foot in the door and to identify the best case assumptions and the best case scenario and how they could implement the product, because they're in a competitive situation. They want to win the business. I just had a call earlier today with a client who asked, we're helping them through the negotiation process. That's where they're at in the digital transformation journey, is negotiating with their system integrators. And the CIO asked me, how much can Third Stage save us by negotiating with the system integrator? And I had to tell them, we can't save you anything. In fact, we're going to cause those numbers to go up. And not that we want to make it intentionally more expensive, but we're going to add a dose of reality to the proposal that you're getting from the system integrators, because there's no way that they can do it for the amount that they've estimated. And if you want to be somewhat conservative and keep your job and not let people down within your organization and be fiscally responsible, you're going to be more reasonable and more conservative with your numbers. So the system integrator, the implementation partner piece of it, that sales process is very flawed and something that really needs to be examined and carefully looked into as you go through the process here. So number seven is, it's a two-part thing. First is Agile, which is the whole Agile implementation methodology. I just recently did a YouTube video unpacking that one topic and why Agile isn't always the best thing for ERP implementations. But actually, that's a symptom of a deeper root cause that I'll call just implementation accelerators. For years now, vendors, system integrators, everyone in the ecosystem has tried to find that silver bullet that they can sell to their customers to help propagate the idea that you can implement this product quickly, cheaply, low risk, without a whole lot of heartache. Reality is these projects are difficult, and there's no matter how well you accelerate the technology component of it, which I would argue we're actually going the wrong direction now with some of the relatively less mature cloud systems that are emerging in the marketplace now, along the flagship or the biggest ERP vendors. But even if you could accelerate the technical aspect of it, there still isn't any way to accelerate and hit the easy button for the organizational change, the people side of the equation, and the operational business process side of the equation. So until there's some science that comes out that I'm not aware of yet that can somehow automate that process and really accelerate the people and process side of the equation, this is a hoax. The implementation accelerators don't exist, but even if they did, they don't really matter, because we're talking about accelerating the implementation of technology versus going through a full-blown business transformation, which would suggest that we're also talking about improving processes and improving the organizational piece of it as well.
If you are trying to achieve digital transformation success, turn to Third Stage Consulting Group. Third Stage's independent and technology agnostic consulting team helps clients define their digital strategies, select the right software, and manage their implementations. With offices in the U.S., Europe, and Australia, our team helps the world's most forward-thinking organizations through their transformation pitfalls and risks. Whether you are embarking on an ERP, HCM, CRM, supply chain management, or any other digital transformation, contact Third Stage Consulting to see how we can help you reach the third stage of transformation success. Learn more about us and download independent reports, videos, and other best practices at thirdstage-consulting.com.
Number six on our list and this is something that's near and dear to my heart, given my background, is independent consultants. When I started my first consulting company about 13 years ago, there weren't a whole lot of independent consultants out there, and there still aren't, by the way. But even the ones that do exist now, some of the ones that do exist, or many of the ones that do exist, claim to be independent, but they still have side deals or some sort of commission-arranged structure where they're getting some sort of kickback or incentive to recommend certain products. And this is something I know firsthand, because that's actually a big reason why I left my previous companies, because we disagreed over what independent really meant and how flexible we could be on the term independent. And that's a problem in the industry in general, because we can't be loyal to the vendors at the same time we're being loyal to clients. So we need to watch out for independent consultants, make sure that there are no backdoor or under the table type agreements or sister companies that are taking money and funneling it back to the same owners. You can get real creative and find a way to technically, on paper, you're independent, but in reality you're not, because you're recommending certain products because you're making more money on it. That's not independent. So that's something that we take pride in at Third Stage, is being 100% agnostic and independent. That's the whole premise for how and why we started the company after the previous company, was to be 100% dedicated and inflexible in what that term means. The next thing is just the overall, the business, the big system integrator model. So I'm going to step out of the way here. So we'll just call it the big implementer model. And what I mean here is you get these big, the big five, the big four, the big system integrators, whatever you want to call them, and their model is to staff as many people as possible on your project. And that the same can be said for any consulting firm, right? I mean, the more hours we bill to a client, the more money we're all making, Third Stage included. But when you look at the size and scale of these big system integrators, where you're talking hundreds of people potentially on a project for a larger organization, even for a mid-sized organization, you could be talking dozens of full-time resources. It's a lot of money. And there's a lack of transparency that goes into that. And there's a certain amount of learned helplessness that's created in that model, because you're so overwhelmed by the army of consultants that are brought in by the big system integrators. They're expensive. They're not 100% transparent. They have their own blind spots that they usually don't acknowledge or won't admit to. They try to keep other third parties out. So there's a lot of dynamics at play there that can be very unhealthy. Most importantly, it shifts the dynamics in their favor away from clients oftentimes. And we see this learned helplessness, as I mentioned, where a lot of these clients that we work with, we have to help them wrestle back control and ownership and buy-in and just overall ownership of the projects. So that big implementer model is concerning. And that's why we always try to encourage our clients to look at some of those smaller implementation partners as well. Some of the mid-tier, even the smaller tier, depending on the size of your organization. There's a lot of really good organizations that have global reach and scale, but they don't necessarily need to have 100 to 300 people full-time on your project in order for it to be worth their time. So that big system integrator model is something else we want to be real careful of and find alternatives. And at the very least, if we go with a big system integrator model, we need to make sure we have some really strong project controls, risk mitigation, program management to manage the system integrators, because this is a problem. And this is why so many digital transformations and ERP projects go over time, over budget, and fail to deliver the expected results. Number four on the list is a relatively recent term. It's emerged, I'd say, in the last 3 or 5 years, maybe even less than that. But the whole concept of lift and shift, it's a term that drives me crazy. It's a way to oversimplify a very complex process of going from, let's say you're on SAP ECC and you're going to S/4HANA. I've heard sales reps say, oh, that's just a lift and shift. We're going from ECC, S/4HANA, it's still SAP. We're just lifting and shifting to a new technology. Oracle, sometimes I'll hear that with Oracle SIs as it relates to going from EBS to Oracle ERP Cloud, Microsoft from AX, Dynamics AX to D365. This whole lift and shift concept really oversimplifies what it takes to go through a digital transformation. And that's what makes it so dangerous, because it's that easy button we all want to hear, especially if we're executives and we're terrified of those big failures we've all heard and read about. This suddenly sounds pretty good. If we can just do a lift and shift, make this really easy, really inexpensive, then we're going to be golden. We should be good to go there. So that's something we need to watch out for. Number three, which is somewhat related to number five, is the overall we'll call it the ERP ecosystem. I know that's hard for an entire ecosystem to be a hoax in and of itself, and it's certainly not by design. I don't think there's any one mastermind behind creating a hoax that's called the ERP ecosystem for each of the major ERP vendors out there. But what we mean by this is that there are so many factors at play that influence and bias organizations to make decisions that aren't necessarily in their best interest. You have these big, massive software companies who are then paying and in cahoots with the big, massive system integrators. They're also paying industry analysts and user groups and third-party training organizations to propagate the messaging and creating somewhat of a machine that delivers a certain marketing message and a sales message. And it works very well. It's extremely effective. And especially when you're talking about trying to influence executives at big companies, the way to influence them is through sheer power and consistency of message. And so that entire ecosystem is built to generate interest in the products and to generate money for the industry, but it's not necessarily aligned with clients' best interest. And that's where the mismatch comes. And we actually have an entire article and YouTube video that dives into this topic in a bit more detail as well. Number two on the list is a term that's been around for quite some time, and it's like nails on a chalkboard. If only I had a chalkboard here, I would actually demonstrate that for you. But it's this whole concept of industry best practices. And I have yet to really see this be super effective, even though it's one of the most overused terms in the industry. And the idea here is software vendors claim that they have industry best practices baked into their software. Therefore, you don't need to worry about your old way of doing things. We bring the industry best practices, and that's the way your new future state should look. Sounds good in theory. It's what we all want to hear. It's part of that easy button concept and appeal that we're all looking for. But the question I would ask is, if this was true, if industry best practices really existed, then how would any company in any given industry have any sort of competitive advantage? How would they have any sort of secret sauce? And how would they differentiate from one another if there's just industry best practices and everyone was using the same best practices? Secondly, if the software vendors are all using industry best practices, then how are they differentiating from one another? So if I'm looking at SAP versus Oracle and they're both saying, and let's say I'm in the pharmaceutical industry, and both are telling me I've got pharmaceutical best practices baked into my software, who am I to believe? I mean, they're both saying they have best practices. Does that mean the software is the same? I don't think that's the case. So in fact, it's not the case. We've been through enough of these implementations to see that all best practices really are simply two things, one of two things or both. One is it's just simply the way the software is built and it's being sold as best practices. Or if it comes to specific configurations related to an industry, it's what the ERP consultant that's implementing for me, it's what they did on their last project in my industry. That's what they're touting as best practice. Doesn't mean it's best practice, it's just what they deployed for the last client that they did it for. So this is something to be really careful of and aware of, that you want to take this with a grain of salt because it really doesn't exist. And now the number one thing on the list, which I suspect is going to be highly controversial. I might get some really negative comments on this, but I think it's probably not only the biggest hoax, but it's the most successful and the most effective hoax that I've seen in 20 years of being in this industry. And that is cloud ERP. Not saying that cloud ERP is right or wrong, but the way the industry has sold cloud and the way that it has forced a tipping point transition all in synchronization for the most part is really interesting to me. I mean, it's fascinating to me that these big software vendors all the way down to the tier twos and tier threes have orchestrated such a transition. Now, there's certainly a subset of people that are benefiting highly from the whole concept of cloud. And I think there's a certain number of software vendors that were around before the whole cloud movement really began. You look at companies like NetSuite, Salesforce on the CRM side, or Plex Systems is another native SaaS system that was SaaS way before it was cool, or cloud way before it was cool. So there certainly has always been a market for cloud. I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but the way that customers are being forced to the cloud now, whether they like it or not, and whether it's right for them or not, is really fascinating. So the key thing here, the key driver, in my opinion, is money. You know, the investors want to see that recurring revenue, the high margin stuff. Therefore, the software vendors are investing heavily in it, and then they're propagating the whole ecosystem to spread that same message about everything's cloud, everyone's moving to the cloud, you're a laggard if you're not on the cloud, 98% of CIOs are moving to the cloud in the next 2 years, or whatever stat you want to see or quote. So that's the number one thing on our slot. And what's really interesting about this list, just to close out, is if we go back, we can kind of add some little dollar signs here around what's driven by money. Like, all this in some way is driven by money, but a few of these are driven by industry, whether it be the software vendors, the system integrators, whatever it may be, they're driven by money. So single ARP, it's driven by money. If I'm a salesperson, I have a lot to gain by you buying everything through my single suite of products. Sales proposal process, if I can get my foot in the door, convince you that my software isn't as expensive or complex or risky as you may think, I'm gonna make more money. Same with implementation accelerators. It sounds good, it's an easy button. Independent consultants that aren't, they're making money on the side under the table deals, driven by money. Big implementer model. I talked to a client the other day that has 240 full-time people from one of the big system integrators on their SAP implementation, which they're a fairly decent sized company, but that is a huge number. A lot of money being made by some of these system integrators on even just one single implementation. Lift and shift, maybe not so much. The ERP ecosystem is certainly driven by money. Best practices maybe, but cloud ERP is certainly driven by money. So you see a lot of dollar signs. I arguably could have had dollar signs in some of the other ones there, but really what's driving these hoaxes are money and profitability for the industry. And don't get me wrong, we're all out there trying to make money, but the degree and the scale at which some of this stuff is happening in the industry is leading customers to blind spots and to misinformation that's leading to bad decisions. And when we ask ourselves, why are ERP implementations failing? It's because a couple of things. There's two of the three root causes are related to bias in terms of just being biased without really considering your options. And the other are your blind spots, the things you don't know. And a lot of this is driving bias and blind spots, which is the root cause of ERP failure. So therefore, that's why these 10 things made the top 10 list of the biggest hoaxes in the ERP software industry. I'm curious to hear what you think, though. Please feel free to submit any comments, even if you hate some of these and you want to disagree with me. I love a good debate, and I love to get a comment that actually makes me rethink a position. So if you have any comments, I'd love to hear the pros and cons that you have. Again, we have the annual ERP report you can download on our description field for this YouTube video. And if you could also like my YouTube channel, that would be a big help as well. You can learn more about myself and Third Stage Consulting at thirdstage-consulting.com. Hope you found this really helpful, and I hope you all have a great day, and I look forward to chatting with you soon. Take care.
Learn more about us and download independent reports, videos, and other best practices at thirdstage-consulting.com.